Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. All right, so I'm positioning this one here. I've had a lot of conversations in my lifetime, and the older I get, the more these kind of conversations happen, especially in my smoke circles. The dudes I hang out with are all amazing individuals. I'm probably going to call this mortality, simply because there's, to really define what I'm going to be talking about, it's going to be a little bit verbose. But what this episode's going to be about is getting your priorities straight in life according to your desires and making sure that the life that you're living is the one you want to live, that you find a way to get something out of it that you really want. And what I find interesting is regardless of how old a person is that I'm talking to about such a thing, regardless if they've lived two lives, you know, barely lived a life or whatever. But it's actually more interesting when I bump into someone like myself where we kind of go, I did it all, right? Yeah, that's cool, right? And then and you're at the end of your game going, shit, but I'm only 45. What the hell am I supposed to do now, right? Your humble narrator just turned 47. But I give an analogy because there's usually a couple different things here, and it's rarely communicated to young people. And that's just so sad. It almost pisses me off. So here it goes. There's something I call the deathbed analogy, and it has to do with your mortality. Mortality is just referring to the fact that we die, and even in this mortal coil, we eventually expire. Sometimes it happens before we want it to. Sometimes it happens to those around us. But the deathbed test is to say you've lived however long you wanted to live. You're in your 80s, you're over 100, and your eyes don't work anymore. Whatever it is. I would definitely recommend that you you deal with the idea that, you know, aside from some huge longevity drug, you don't want to go too far over 100. You just don't. Because your shit don't work anymore. And what's the point in just being mummified in consciousness, right? But you're in your deathbed, and you're looking up. And there's two parts to this analogy. What do you want to see? What do you want to be seeing when you look up? And what do you want to be thinking when you sit and relax? Do you want to be surrounded by family? Your kids. The kids of your kids. Your friends. And when you think back, what will you have wished you had done that you hadn't done? And what will you have been totally concerned about in your life? That you're like, when you were living, right? You were totally worried about blowing that money, doing that thing. And at the very end, you're like, yeah, I blew that money. I did that thing. I'm so glad I did that thing. It was really tough to pay for it after I did it, but I did it. And it, you know, it's just the thing I was supposed to do. Now, this analogy is way more powerful when you're actually dealing with a potential regret in your mind. You know, you're thinking, oh shit, should I do this thing? Or damn, should I have done that thing? The deathbed analogy can assist you in that phrase, in that phase of your life, right? But I say, try to think about it routinely. Not every day. I used to do this thing, and somewhere in my frickin' garage is a box which I cannot find. I used to call it the self seminar. I think I mentioned this in season one. I did it completely by accident. I was in the basement of my grandmother's house. I was 17 years old, just about to leave and come to California. And I just pushed record on a cassette tape. And I just started talking. It's my, you know, my really young voice. And I just consumed the tape. And I just talked about my life, talked about my relationship with my parents and all this other stuff. Which is really, I really want to listen to it now. But I did this every single year after I came to California. And I called it the self-seminar, and I went from like 60-minute tapes to 90-minute tapes. And then I finally started putting them on metal tapes so they'd really last forever. Just one record, you know. Metal tapes, for those of you guys who don't know, cassette tapes were made out of nice plasticky, you know, innards. And the metal tapes, I don't know how they did it, but the coating on them was better. So the big upsell was that it sounded better. But you could not record over them for shit. You had to have a really strong cassette player to actually wipe out the previous image on the tape as you record it again. So hilarious. But this is what I did. I talked about everything that I accomplished within the year since my last recording, and then I would record what I want to accomplish in the next year. And it had this profound law of attraction, because you have to understand, every single year I would beat the estimate from the previous year. Either be I got a job that was more intense than I wanted, which I already set my goal really, really high, or I got more money, or both. Something would happen better. But the idea was, I programmed my mind that for the next year, this is what I'm going to accomplish. And you know, every single year I made the recording, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I could only think maybe it's law of attraction shit, I don't know. But I sure as hell didn't sit there on the tape going, well, this is what I can't do. But this episode's about your mortality. I was thinking about doing a show purely on the fear of death, and I think that's kind of morbid. So I'm going to fold in a lot of the thoughts here into the subject of dying. When I was in high school, I took a class called Survival in Lit and Death in Lit. And I couldn't believe the class existed. Here I am, like 16 years old, going, what the hell is that? I mean, what a weird name for a class. But my teacher, Mrs. McDonald, brilliant person, it changed my life. It utterly and completely changed my life, that class. And that's the class which you hear me talk about, where I did two things. One, we studied survival, which had to do with the Chilean soccer team that got stranded up there in the mountains and eventually cannibalized the dead in order to survive, and all the repercussions of their lives after that event. And then in the death side of it, it's the class where we went around to mortuaries and read the death books. And I had other things in my life which got me into those same circles, where I was able to access those books a couple times. It's really weird. Our mortuary at our town was heavily involved in our town's success. It was very interesting. There was a little time when our mortician, I guess, got on national television and was doing a pitch for our little hometown on, like, you know, Good Morning America or Good Morning Today or whatever the hell that show was in the morning. But there's going to be, let's go for survival right now in terms of mortality. You are who you are right now. Now, let's say you believe in reincarnation, as I do. And someone says, well, you know, I can do anything I want to do because I'm going to get reincarnated. And I believe that the universe is ever forgiving, so I can be Hitler or I can be Santa Claus. And either way, I get expunged. It's just a process. We're all bacteria, because I really can't kill anyone. Reincarnation exists, then you don't worry about killing anyone because they're going to reincarnate. Now, the sin at that point would be you didn't let them have a chance being who they were. But now here's the thing. You are who you are at this time and at this place. I'm not sure you're ever going to get another chance to be this person again. Ever, ever, ever. And let's say that you would like something to be different about yourself. You're like, well, that's fine. I don't even like the way I look. I don't like the way my family is and blah, blah, blah. You have to understand that when you become an artist and you're crafting realities, however you do it, the gift to an artist is constraint. That's what makes beauty. What can you do with the constraints that you have? That's where it becomes creative. Take the actor Steve Buscemi, who's phenomenal. Phenomenal at everything he's ever done, ever. Now imagine you haul him into a William Morris agency. It's 1980. He's a young man. I don't know how old the guy is. I assume he'd be employable at 1980. And he's got these really bug eyes, really gangly teeth. I mean, he makes fun of the fact that he looks strange. But if you were to say, you know, this guy should be the next big actor, well, the agency's going to take a double take on that guy. Simply because he doesn't match a cookie cutter format of what an actor in Hollywood looks like. But we know he's amazing. We've seen him now. Go watch Boardwalk Empire. He is phenomenal. Go watch every movie he's ever made. He's phenomenal. But now imagine if Steve looked in the mirror and said, Holy shit, what happened there? Why do I look like this? Look at everybody else. They don't have bug eyes. Their teeth are straight. Jesus. They're 6 feet tall. They're muscular. Why do I gotta be in this thing? What if he did that? Then we would be robbed personally of the amazing accomplishments of Steve Buscemi. Now, I throw that one out there because it's low-hanging fruit. People who pity themselves because they don't look like a Ken doll or a Barbie doll. Ask Mick Jagger. It hadn't hurt him too bad. You know, I've mentioned this in the past. But then you might look at your life and go, well, geez, I'm not rich. I don't have the building blocks that all the other people have. Well, you know that's not going to fly. How many people have totally and completely succeeded with absolutely nothing? Absolutely nothing. And I mean, you know, you might be broke but have a really good support family, you know, like a family that really supports you. But there are people out there that never had any family, barely any friends, never had any spouses or kids. Broke as a joke. Maybe their education was pretty crappy. But there was that one thing they were good at that benefited not only themselves, but the rest of humanity. It wasn't a negative thing. They didn't become a hitman or something. They invent something. They become the story of Job. For those of you not into that story, you know, Job has a wife, kids, and all of his livestock. Life is good. And the devil bets God because God's a total asshole. Hey, I bet I can... But I could turn that guy against you. And guy goes, nope. So the devil kills his wife, kills his kids, kills his livestock. But Job doesn't turn. He still prays to God. And God says, see, told you. And the devil goes, double or nothing? And God's like, yeah, what the hell? I like fucking up people's lives. And so he goes down there, kills his wife, kills his kids, kills his livestock. Job doesn't turn. So he says, you lose. And Job gets, I guess, two wives, double the kids, and double the livestock, and he's perfectly mentally fine, having had two of his wives die, all of his children die, and all of his livestock die. There's no psychosis there. But anyway, we always say story of Job because you pull yourself out of the worst situation on earth. I've said a number of times on the show, what I try to do with my employees and my friends is to say, let's find out what makes you tick. What's your purpose in life? Sometimes people say, I like watching sports. And then I say, okay, then you should go get a job in sports. If the next thing out of their mouth is, no, I just like watching it. Well, that's not your purpose. That's just a bunch of bullshit you waste your time with. Let's find your purpose. What makes you tick? What makes you hop out of bed? Almost every single human being over 15 years old has popped out of bed in their lifetime excited to be alive. And it was outside the construct of love, which is a great reason to be alive as well. Now, I'm always saying that there's self, family, and work. Those are the three hemispheres of your life that you have to manage, right? So when you think about your mortality, and all that really is you think about the timeline that is your life. You are born, you live, and then you die. Every single one of us is going to die. How crazy is that, right? It's cool. But I assure you, there's some shit on the other side. But we don't need to worry about that right now. Except to make sure that perhaps, as we live this particular life, we don't do anything to sort of upset the balance of our own judgment. I think when you pass away, a couple things probably happen. Any lies that you told yourself and anything that you've done that you shouldn't do, which is, I think, easily defined as you stepped on someone's head to get ahead. That's really what sin is all about. You stepped on someone's head to get ahead. You know, and there's lies and deceit of all various granularities. But as soon as you die, I think that you immediately live in a hell that is much more subtle than the one that's fire and brimstone, which is sort of for your caveman people. The hell that you run into is essentially a mirror. You get to see yourself unadulterated. All of the safeties have been pulled off. You get to see yourself on a level that is wild. And then you judge yourself. Now, the beautiful thing about that process, if it occurs, this is just my hunch, is it is a very, oh, well, there I am, feeling. You're either looking at yourself saying, oh, geez, I kind of fucked that one up. Or you're looking at yourself going, I am proud of who that person is. Warts and all, I'm proud. Yeah, I screwed up, but look at there. You know, I was a kid, I was all confused, and that's kind of because of my upbringing right there, those bad friends I got a hold of, or I was just by myself and confused. And then here, I kind of figured it out right there. So for the majority of my life, I figured it out. Or maybe you lived the majority of your life a total dick, but in the last couple years, you absolutely figured out and repented and went and got forgiveness for folks. Even if they're dead, you at least had a prayer to them, a message to them, and said, I'm really, really sorry, I was a jerk. And that's why I think it is important, and religion teaches this, to make sure that before you exit this planet, you sort of make amends if you've made mistakes, if you can. And because I think that if you have a lot of years left and you're carrying any guilt in your chest, I think it's extremely important to feel your chest, to feel if you feel tight in your chest, and just stop your day and go pace somewhere and go talk to yourself somewhere where you can figure out, God, why do I feel like this? I don't want to feel like this. What is it? Do I have to call my mother and say I'm sorry? When I was a child, I did this. What do I got to do? Call my buddy? Maybe you just need to tell someone you love them. Maybe you need to stop what you're doing right now because it's not productive and some force on your soul is saying, go do this. You know you need to do that. I know it's this one's harder, but this one's your destiny. Whatever it is, make sure you monitor your internal feelings and take action to clean up those feelings. The second stage of the afterlife, before the party starts, maybe. I don't really think this, you know, it happens chronologically or anything, but maybe we meet a creator. Maybe. And at that point, I'm going to tell you it's going to be a rhetorical conversation because if there is a creator, any type of central consciousness to our existence, that you will stand before that being, however that's done. And you will know that that being knows every single thing about you you've ever been, ever thought. And that is where maturity is going to pay off in a really big way. When I hear childish adults turn God into this wrathful child, this sort of Bam Bam from the Flintstones, just wrathful and ignorant, I think it's phenomenal to contemplate them standing before a creator. How was that done? You know, it's like they should have a bone tied in their hair because they have no concept, no depth to possibly understand just the infinitesimal definition of what it would be to be a supreme being. God has to be, in my opinion, infinitely patient, infinitely forgiving to deal with the riffraff that ends up in heaven. All the varying levels of folks that get to heaven. Could you imagine? You know, next time you go to a big event, a concert or a sporting event or anything, imagine you having to sit in a chair and you line up every single person in that auditorium and you have to have the conversation about their entire life with them. Imagine that day. You know, some of them are going to be phenomenal and interesting and the other ones are going to be just like, oh my Lord. But that's what God's job is, right? Maybe. But we don't have to get existential at all to deal with our mortality. Let's say you're a very patient atheist watching me talk about all this stuff. Okay, hats off to you for one thing. You know that we want our lives to matter. In fact, for me, I think that if you're an atheist, this stuff matters 50,000 billion quadrillion times more than if you have perhaps an agnostic view or some sort of Christian view or a religious view. Because this is it. This is it. Used to be this ridiculous program in my high school that if you could tell the high school that you weren't going to go to college, meaning you're going to be a farmer, it's usually reserved for farm boys in my, where I'm from, then you didn't have to go to at least half of the year in your senior year. You'd go work somewhere. So you go half day and then you go work. And I started looking at that right when I was going through high school and I was thinking, wait a minute. So the kid tells you he's not going to go to college, which means this is the last bit of education this child will ever have in their life. And your big plan is to make sure they get even less education. The second they walk out of high school is the last time they get any information from some institutionalized source. And this is back when education was pretty good. But the person is going to go off and go to college for 4 extra years. Well, shit, let them out early. They're the ones that are going to get more education. You probably shouldn't let anyone out early, but it just made no sense at all. Made no sense at all. Make sure the uneducated remain more uneducated, right? It's weird. I mentioned that analogy, or mentioned the story, because if you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, then your life is it. I mean, it should almost be an act of desperation just to wake up every day. Holy shit, I have consciousness. This is all something from nothing. Somehow I've manifested the ability to think and love and feel pain and compassion. And this is all just random chemicals in the universe. But the inverse could also hit you where you, again, you believe you live forever. And so, whatever. I'm not sure if there is a God, what our purpose is in this world. I don't know. Am I supposed to be the best I can be? Am I supposed to wring every single drop of water out of this chamois? It's sort of how I play my life. For me, the answer is yes. I am supposed to be the most incredible human being I can possibly be. Now, I don't accomplish that, of course, but I try. Part of the charter of this show for my soul is to say, well, I think I've had some pretty deep thoughts about things in my lifetime, and I do share them with my friends. But now how ignorant would I be to go to die or even get to my deathbed and say, I fail to endorse the internet as a mechanism to distribute my information. I will never be able to put something in your mind. I would never want to just say, oh, open your brain, here's my idea. Never. Even if I think I have the gestalt image to put in your brain that makes world peace, I believe 100% in your sovereign need to vet the information and choose to put it in your cupboard. I do wish that there was a way to institutionalize the dropping of LSD at 18. Hell, maybe earlier. Doesn't hurt the human body. You know, government certified, perfectly made LSD, not some weird spin-off thing that's being sold as LSD, and get us to all love each other. Get us to see love as a frequency, as a piece of light, to feel it, to connect the world together, because then we wouldn't war. Trust me. But how hard do you push this life? It's up to you. I always tell people this, you know, life is the best video game you'll ever play. And back in the Atari 2600 days, it would have made sense. But now, since we have games like World of Warcraft and other massive multiplayer online games, everyone understands, you know, you're logging in, you're playing an avatar, and you're talking to other avatars, and you're dealing with scripted characters. Well, this one's the biggest one. This one's already programmed. This one's already debugged. And it's where we're living right now. So you get a choice every day you wake up. You get a choice. What do you want to do today? And that's the cool thing. When I say, if it hasn't killed you yet, you're good. Now, obviously, there's some exceptions for people that have been incarcerated who are currently incarcerated. Some people are handicapped. Maybe they got handicapped by being adventurous. Maybe, you know, their lifestyle is, I get out in the wilderness and I climb mountains and then they slip. And you get paralyzed and you're like, Jesus, the thing I love to do, I can't do anymore. One, I don't think anyone really believes that, because I don't know what a man in a wheelchair hasn't done. But if you're alive and you can think sentiently, you can have a tremendous amount of fun in this world. Even if the only thing that you have at your disposal is a piece of paper and a pen, you can do all kinds of things. You could write stories, write fantasies. You could create something, architect something. How many times have you seen a video on the internet where someone who is most definitely handicapped in the world, whether they were born a particular way or they got injured in a particular way, they're handicapped. But you couldn't convince them that. They get around the world. Some of them become motivational speakers, right? I got a buddy from high school. He's actually the son of my geometry teacher. Great kid. He dove into a little shallow lake that we have, I believe, in my hometown. Didn't realize that there was a rock bedding very close to the surface, and essentially he smacked his head directly into a rock and broke his neck. I believe this happened to him in early high school. He was paralyzed from the neck down, still is to this day. Now, he had a lot of choices about how he was going to handle his life. I think he had a good family that didn't let him get down. But the spirit of this kid is insane. He wrote a book about his life. Maybe I'll put it up here and put a link to it. But he wrote a book about how to live life after you get paralyzed from the neck down. He's a quadriplegic. Now, for guys, you might think, oh, geez, you know, I wouldn't be able to get a wife and have kids and all that kind of stuff. I don't think he has any kids yet, but he just got married a couple of years ago. Incredibly beautiful wife, super empathetic, and they're a tag team, man. They travel the planet together. And ladies, there's plenty of men that'll be there for you as well. Now, but we see one of those situations and we think, oh my gosh, this guy has never stopped. Hey, I don't have a book published. He does. Well, that's pretty freaking cool, right? But you'll see these videos online, and the caption underneath the video will be, okay, man, okay, folks, there's no excuse for our lives because look at how accomplished these individuals are. And sometimes it does take, you know, us comparing our lives to other people to really realize that there are plenty of reasons why we can get out of bed in the morning and do anything. You might think you have aches and pains, but these folks can't feel anything, or they live in chronic pain. That doesn't mean you have to sit around and tolerate things that you think you might be able to change. But I want you to think of your destiny as one of the most entertaining and fun things that you can design. You can design it. And there's really almost no limitation as to what you can accomplish. The only limitations I've ever been able to identify is if you're a 5-foot Asian woman, yeah, you're not going to be a tackle for the NFL. Other than a physical differential, that's about it. That's about it. If you don't have knowledge in something, you can merely teach yourself. You know, if you don't have skills in something, you can practice. You could be deathly afraid of talking to an audience, and within 3 months, something was said to you, some experience happened, and you're on stage, maybe you're a stand-up comedian. But I want to throw some ideas at you. Some fundamental themes of life that I want you to consider. Because sometimes we get so embedded in our lives that we just don't know how to open up the conversation about our destinies. I think I even have an episode called Destiny, I think. About like 132 episodes right now. Like, what the hell have I said? But now, if you look at it from self, family, and work, let's just cut life's entire spectrum of what you can accomplish into those three sections. Self would be even your relationship with God, to be honest. But there is imbuing yourself with knowledge and talent and introspection. If you increase your perspective of the universe, that is a beautiful addition to self, even though society as a whole won't acknowledge or doesn't have a formal means of acknowledging that unless you make a show like this, and someone can go, oh yeah, I really like the way you've thought things through, which I encourage you to do. The next one up is family. Now, when I say family, you might go, well, what about my friends? Well, anyone that you would say, what about my friends, that you would consider, let's just say that is your family. Those are your family members. Acquaintance, well, that's just someone you bumped into. See my friendship episode, right? But anyone you have as a routine friend, whether they have achieved the best friend addiction level, they're your family. You know, in America, and I'm pretty sure this is something we got from Europe, when the child is born, they get sort of a godmother and godfather. Sometimes they're married, sometimes they're different people. But in this age, I can definitely say in my life that if you're a best friend of a father and he has children, then when you show up, your uncle, I'm Uncle Mark when I come over. And I am, which is funny because I have friends of mine that are very traditional, very family-oriented folks. They come from very strong families, Italian families, that sort of thing. And where the family that I'm walking into is very traditional, the notion of being me being an uncle is sort of pretty hardcore. I mean, it is like, this is your uncle. You'll do what he says. You'll listen to him. If you need anything and I'm not available, you call your uncle right here. And his responsibility to you is to treat you like you are his child. So he's going to keep you from putting your hand in the fire, and he's going to pick you up when you're drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning or bail you out of jail. That's your responsibility. That's his responsibility to you, and so you can lean on him just like a parent. And, you know, the nice thing is if the child needs to review something and they're afraid to talk to their parents, they're like, I got to communicate with my father, my mother about this kind of weird thing that I've done or that I'm thinking about doing. You can talk covertly and in secret to your uncle, and that's it. So society's got these really cool little vignettes with the way that we form relationships. So I want to say your friends are your family. So when I say that, that's there. And of course, work is how you essentially take what you've put inside yourself and you acknowledge it into a destiny that is something that creates a product or service based on your skill set. What's funny is and I know I'm bouncing around here a little bit, but I'm getting prepared to call out some things in each one of these areas that you can do. So I'm going to go from work here real quick. People, we forget to ask very basic questions to ourselves all the time. It doesn't matter how enlightened you are. When you talk to a guy like me and you say, God, you know, I hate my job. I freaking hate it. And I'll say, this is the question people forget to ask all the time. I always say, well, if you didn't have this job, what would you do? What's your fantasy job? What would you do if you had all the money in the world? So what I end up doing is I start throwing them all of the cliched super mega jobs that people are raised, at least in America, with our culture, to desire. So I'll say, well, would you want to be an actor, a singer? Would you want to be famous and for something? Do you want to be an inventor? Do you want to be a painter, a book writer? What do you want to do? What makes you tick, man? And what's funny is I get a lot of deer eyes for a split second where they go, all right, I'm supposed to be asking this question to myself every day. Why is it taking this random person to ask me that question? And what's exciting about that is I start to see their brain tick. They're first looking at my face, and the second I start asking this question, I start seeing them stare off into the distance, just over my head, the 60,000-foot stare. And I know I got them ticking. It's so funny when I see folks like Tony Robbins break this down to people. He gets the same thing, and he's just asking the same thing over and over and over. It's like a miracle. It's like someone who is coming out of the desert, and they don't know why they're about to die, and you give them their first sip of water. They're like, oh yeah, I gotta drink water. Now, Bill Cosby is utterly and completely fucked up his life. But there was a fantastic episode of his show, The Cosby Show, back in the 80s and 90s, where he went to school and taught his son's class, and in his fictional son's class. And the whole thing was the tension that his father was teaching the class. And so Bill Cosby went around the room asking this question to high school students, and he said, well, what do you want to do in life? And somebody said something, and he goes, okay, so you know that there's some steps between you and that thing. And you've heard me talk about this if you've watched every single show, but it's been a while. And we're framing this a little bit different now. They said, okay, so you know that there's steps. Well, what's the first step? And the kid thought about it and goes, well, I guess I got to finish high school. I said, that's right. Well, and because you're picking a technical career, what do you think happens after that? Oh, I guess I got to go to college. That's right. And he just broke it down to the kid so that he realized that there were steps you have to take to get what you want in life. Now, my analogy that I've said in a previous episode is that we do not know how many steps it takes sometimes. We really don't know no matter what, because opportunity is the last step to get the actual job. And then you sort of have to prove it to everyone. You have to prove it to the employer that you actually are who you say you are. which is a combination of submitting a resume and then hopefully getting an interview that's being conducted by someone who has the capability of asking you the right questions to mine out of you what it is you can do. And of course, my subtle suggestion is to say, you better own your own interview and make sure that you volunteer the information just in case they don't ask the right questions. But to jump back, you know it all starts with the self. The way you perceive your mortality is the driving force in your life. It is the rocket fuel on your engine that pushes you. Now, we know that there's laissez-faire folks that'll be completely happy getting up every single day and living a fairly basic life. I've had a friend in my life back in my early 20s. He and his wife would routinely sell everything that they owned, and I mean everything, get a lump of cash, and they would go off to these remote islands in the Pacific, and they would rent a hut for like 2 years. They just put all the money down on this little hut, and believe me, it cost nothing. And they would go out every single day, and they vetted the island for this capability. They threw fish nets out every morning, caught fish, brought it in. They'd sell 2/3 of the fish to the local fishermen, which then sold it off to the local people inland, and then they would cook the rest of the fish for the next 2 or 3 days, probably 2 days, and eat fish. And they simply went in a circle like that, and they would do it for 2 years at a time. But the interesting thing I got out of them, because I asked them, I said, well, why would you ever come home? And they said, well, the one thing that we've learned is that you will feel your purpose reemerge when you're in these environments, because you're living this sort of mundane existence, but it's a Zen sort of self-study. And they're not doing it isolated. They do it with each other, and they loved each other very, very much. And so they would come back and get jobs. I don't know how they did it, because they were probably late 30s, early 40s, and it's a bitch getting a job when you're a little bit older. But whatever reason, his skills, he was a programmer with me. I don't know what she did. But it supercharged their life for another, I don't know how many years they stayed inland after that. I would assume probably about a half decade before they would do it again. But the one thing they said was, we're building up a giant nest egg in a bank such that this is how we're going to end our life as well. Because we're going to go off to one of these islands and no one will ever see us again. And we're going to participate in a different society with different friends, different value systems, completely devoid of any commercialism and capitalism. I mean, a little bit of capitalism, but not the grind of the system. They'll get up when they want, go to bed when they want. And I thought that was very interesting. They engaged life as a video game. There's a famous phrase that life is not a rehearsal. And that's something that I think an atheist should really think about. That basically says that anytime you have identified your destiny, but you put it off, you're crazy. Utterly crazy, man. Because you're not getting any younger. No one's getting any younger, no matter what. You're always one step closer to death. Again, even if you believe you renew, here's the thing. I was born, I think, at probably one of the most fortuitous times in world history. The only thing I might have done is gone back 10 years before my birth and grabbed 10 more years of the blissful nature of America. Because, you know, life is hard after 9/11, after they usurped the planet and put us into this fear-mongering century that we're living out right now. But the nice thing that I got to experience in my lifetime was a wholesome America in the 70s. Pretty much a last big hoorah of the 80s. And then I got to see the technical era, the internet revolution in the 90s. But now here's the thing. In the 70s, I became an artist. I became intelligent. I studied all the things I always talk about. In the 80s, I spent my personal time manifesting my destiny in becoming the best artist I could be, becoming the best computer programmer I could be with the hardware that I had access to, such that when I moved to California at 17, within 2 months, roughly, I had a professional job in the computer industry without a college degree. I was so fluent at programming that when they'd see my high school ring, they'd ask me what college that was. And here I am just covered in pimples, and I'm like, you kidding me? So no, this is my high school ring. I just graduated last year. But because I took my life seriously and was very fortunate to be isolated in a little tiny town. You're talking about, we had no computer stores. We had a Radio Shack that sold a little Coco computer. I got a Coco 2.0 because my father's best friend won it, and he sold it to my dad, I think, for like $50. It's probably about a $300 system with a little printer, used a little ballpoint pen. It's really weird. The whole thing was like a roll of toilet paper. And man, I maxed that computer out. I did everything on that thing. At the high school, I had PCs and Apple IIs. The colleges had bigger computers, but I didn't really get into those. But there was no internet to distract me. So by the time the internet explodes in the mid-90s, I created projects for myself. My employer said, "You're in charge of developing the internet expansion pack to our database software." And I was like, "Man, I don't know anything about the internet." And they go, "Don't worry, it's easy." And they showed me. So here's the thing. I was born in a privileged time to be able to take advantage of all these things in sequential order. You know, the 70s fed my 80s, but the 80s fed my 90s, and the 90s fed the 21st century. Wherever you're living right now, no matter when you were born, you've probably had a similar experience. For your generation, there are opportunities. Decade to decade, things transition. Sort of how our world is, you know, the marketing departments of the world control our cultural evolution. It's actually sort of unfortunate. But at the same time, it sort of adds the subliminal pressure to life. If you don't believe me, think about how you group music in your mind. There's 70s music, 60s music, 80s music, 90s music, right? That the precipice changeover between decades is controlled by a marketing department. Oh, it's the 90s. You got to dress a different way. Unfortunately, we are struggling in the third decade to get out of the fucking 90s with our clothing. It's really sad. You know, hipster wearing flannel or some plaid shirt. Come on, dude. Do you realize that if you were to be teleported to the 90s and walk into a men's clothing store, you wouldn't realize you had traveled through time? You wouldn't. How sad is that? We didn't dress in the 80s like we dressed in the 70s. Bell bottoms went away. The only thing we got now are skinny jeans, to which if you wear boots like me, it's a super pain in the ass. But regardless if you believe in reincarnation or not, this is your only chance to be who you are right now. Your first name and your last name is you. You look in the mirror, that's your mortal coil, that's your body. You're only going to get this one body once. The parents that you have, the friends that you have. Some of you don't like your parents, but your friends are cool. If you have children, these are your children with your mortal coil. You only get the one set with this particular body and time. Now, one of the caveats to society right now is that we live in a fast food nation. And what that really means is a much deeper metaphor than how quickly you can get a burger. When I was a kid, you changed your own oil in your car. Now I go back to the Midwest and barely anyone changes the oil in their car. Now, someone might argue, well, it's a lot easier for them to do it, so why not pay them to do it? Well, it's about three times as much as you doing it yourself, sometimes six times as much when they add all this other bullshit to it. Nobody knows how to cook anymore in America. If you find a person that can cook, it's amazing. Men, I guarantee you, on the West Coast, we have utterly given up on the notion that a woman can cook a meal. I know that sounds sexist, but on the flip side of sexism, on that analogy, a woman can barely find a man who knows how to fix a car. When the car starts having all these issues, geez, I would imagine 2/3 of the men, probably not in Orange County where I live, because we have a lot of hot rods and there's a lot of body shops and stuff, but they have no idea what that rattle means, what a turbulent engine might be experiencing. We've lost our way. We've lost our ability to self-maintain. And that will affect your ability to command your destiny. Now, sometimes, if you're like myself, I've got friends, a lot of friends like myself, your destiny is way over the need to spend time in your own mind until you perhaps have a family, but maybe you're great at cleaning your house, but you get a maid. It's not because you don't know how to clean your house. It's not because you're lazy. It's because you're going to take all the time that you would normally spend cleaning your home, and you're going to apply it to your career. At times in my life, I've had a maid for very short bits, you know, like a couple weeks here, a month there. It's because my life got so incredibly busy, I thought, man, I cannot keep my house looking clean. and run a video game company. I'm up, I drive to work, I handle shit, I stay late, I come home, I get a little food in me, maybe a little program through HBO or whatever, and then I'm asleep, and the whole thing repeats again. So we have to manage our lives according to our dedications, right? If you're a truther, then you know that self-educating is massive. And we got all kinds of shows on how to do that, right? But there's learning the truth of the world, which merely increases your perception of reality. And then there are trade skills that you must learn to hold down a job or to create a job from nothing. It's perfectly fine to work for someone else, even a major corporation, as long as that makes you feel like you're living. That's the only secret. Purpose is love and love is purpose, as we say on this show. So if you're doing a job that seems like it's part of your internal purpose, the reason why you bounce out of bed in the morning and not crawl out of the bed on all four legs, then you're okay. But then there's love. Then there's companionship with other human beings. Now, if I said to you, go buy a bunch of books or download a bunch of books or study a bunch of YouTube videos and teach yourself a trade skill and go get a job, you know it's pretty much a mathematical reality. If you just put the time in, you get the skills out, you put your resume in, figure out a way to communicate that to the employer, go see my episode on how to get a job for all the details on that. It's very important if you're looking for work, and it's a done deal. But what about companionship? What about companionship? How do we pull that off? There's an interesting thing that happens in life when you get a little bit older. And it doesn't matter what age you are physically. It just means your brain. Where you will start to gain the skill of looking at yourself from outside yourself. You will be able to see yourself behave immaturely. If anybody, especially with all these video cameras, videotapes you, it's a phenomenal experience to see yourself after you videotaped yourself. I experience it every time I edit a video. Now, I feel pretty damn comfortable in my skin today, but, you know, there were times when I either stupidly acted a certain way and thought I was being acceptable when I wasn't, or I managed to get something right for a split second. But it was through maturity that I was able to hear myself say something and then observe myself within my own consciousness, almost like a tiny little out-of-body experience. You could see yourself from the outside. We know that the folks that have problems finding other people to share their life with typically do not have that ability. They're unable to pull themselves out and say, well, who am I? Who am I to other people? How am I perceived by other people? And I would be the first person to say, don't really worry too much about what other people think about you. But the only target that statement actually addresses are people that don't matter, people that you'll never share your life with. But when it comes to the people that you're going to share your life with, it matters. It matters how your wife or your husband perceives you, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. Probably matters how your friends perceive you, because how do we find some of the best spouses that we can ever find? It's through recommendations from friends, because your friends have a really positive opinion of you, and they go, you know what? That dude, your buddy would probably love her, or she would really like that guy over there. Let's do a little dinner and just put them together and see what happens. A lot of you have experienced that. Somehow, some of you have found your spouses that way. A lot of the episodes that I have made, there's one on self. It's to give you that dimension to yourself, to give you mechanisms by which you can perceive yourself and hone yourself to be perhaps someone that you're not right now. There's a lot of celebrities that can teach us things, the ones that are actually fairly centered in the world. And they are very conscious of the fact that they were person A, but they really wanted to be person B. And they designed person B. They became serendipitously person A. And they really wanted to change who they were. And so they merely started to do what I think Tony Robbins says all the time, which is they started acting like the person they wanted to be. And it could be the most incredible about-face moment in your life where you're like, I'm simply not behaving like I used to behave. I'm just going to make it today. I'm not going to be that other person. I'm going to be more patient, more interesting, maybe more overt. Maybe I'm too recluse. I'm going to start talking to people in public instead of being the shy one. You know, if you're a shy person, you will bump into this behavior where people are interested in you because you're a mystery. And you'll get attention that way, but in the end, if you can't transition into a person that can communicate, then they'll be curious to the extent they figure you out, and then they walk away. You don't get what you want. Now, what I'm not sure of is the following. Well, let me go from two different stages here. This is going to be about being on your deathbed, and this is all an analogy, of course, right? Every person who has been in a situation where they were constantly around a loved one, you know, like in America, women are taught that the second they start dating, they're not to stop until they get married. And if they ever stop dating, well, they're damaged goods. That's the way every little girl's taught today. But men, well, we don't have that luxury. We spend plenty of time by ourselves between dating most of the time. But what you find out when you're forced to be by yourself is that it's very painful for weeks sometimes, sometimes months. Then all of a sudden, there's this weird sweet spot in the day. Probably, it's usually happened to me in the evening hours where I get up and I normally would feel that emptiness of not having someone in my life that's close. And it's okay. You feel satiated. You're like, well, I love my life. I've got this little routine to myself and this is good. That could be very dangerous as well. Because the flip side is that, you know, we are a collection of not only our thoughts, but the challenges that we have traversed in our life. Going through obstacles is where we find out who we are. Like I always say, a hero is a person, you know, you define a hero by the decisions they make under pressure. That's us. We have to be our own heroes. We have to be. Anytime I hear someone say, well, I'm never having children, I'm like, okay, it's your life. I do not need to press you into such a thing. And if you believe you shouldn't have children, maybe you shouldn't, because maybe you'll be a really bad parent. But my immediate thought is, well, you will never fully mature. You never will. Because you will live without perhaps a spouse, if that's how you're making that occur. But you'll never be a father or a mother, which will kick your living ass. It will. But it'll also, through kicking your ass, will give you a perception of life that you never, ever, ever could have otherwise. Now, maybe you raise someone else's kids. Maybe you marry into a family with children. And so, technically, you are a parent. I'm not saying it has to be a biological relationship there. I know plenty of people have done that. But eventually, children have children sometimes. And then you become a grandparent. And you basically get the sweet spot. You get to go in and raise those kids at various times. But when it's time to go to bed, they go home to your kids. And they got to deal with all of the bedtimes and all the wiping asses and feeding every day and taking to school and all those chores, right? Now, I haven't become a grandfather yet. I hope to one day. But I know that the relationship I have with my grandparents, which was a lot closer than I have with my regular parents, my biological parents, I got to watch them be interested in me. And they get to see their genetics. And there's this little law of the world, which I believe is 100% true. And I'm of the opinion that at some point we're going to biologically prove this. Now, there's some folks that will, there's a phrase called chip off the old block. And what that means is that the father and the son are exactly the same. The mother and the daughter are exactly the same. But that's pretty rare in my experience. In my experience, the grandchildren are very much like their grandparents. Even visually speaking, you will have a daughter look like her grandmother, but not so much like her mom. I hear this all of the time. Now, I'm part alien, so I don't look like either one of my parents on either side of my family, but my behavior, my aggressiveness towards life is very much like my father's mother. I didn't meet my father's father. But what I've learned about him, I'm not much like him either. But I found this amazing connection with my father's mother, my grandmother. She understood me on a level that no one understood me, just instantaneously. When I talked about destiny, she was right there. She said the right things back to me to help me find my destiny and to stay into it, you know. And now both my grandparents, both my sets of grandparents, was one on one side and two on the other, were very supportive in everything that I ever wanted to do. And my, you know, like my uncle on my mom's side was the one that taught me all that stuff. So he went down a path that was his interest that just so happened to correlate with my interests. He was an artist. He was a scientist. He was into martial arts. I mean, he was just an incredible guy. He's still alive. But when it comes to experiencing life, I want you to think about the old analogy when you're watching a movie by yourself and you're totally content with yourself, but it's a comedy. It's a comedy and there's a joke and you laugh. And invariably, you will figure out at that moment, you look around the room and you go, shit, that was funny. And I'm experiencing this all by myself. And you've invariably experienced that with another human being. And it's so much better with somebody else. Now, a lot of us have friends, even if we don't have a spouse. And that's where we get that little communicative experience, right? But one of the reasons why I think we have to get self together is to make sure that we do have family. Because your friends have to go home to their spouses, to their family, to their kids. You can't spend every waking moment with them. Now, some of you know you need your private time. And if that's the case, you need to find a spouse that needs their private time so you guys can balance yourself out. But this show is about your mortality, about that feeling of, geez, it's hard to imagine not being alive, isn't it? I mean, being in the spirit world, even if you completely believe in that and you have a lot of physical metaphors for how that might exist, well, that's a whole other stage. It's a whole other place. And I believe that through my own, if you watch my suicide episode, when I was that, if you guys missed it, the little story inside that was that when I was about 23 years old, I was dating a girl, I got all upset, and I tried to commit suicide through, drinking sleeping pills, which one of our listeners kindly informed me that for at least the last 35 years, they have mixed those in a way that it can't kill you. You'd have to have some pretty big, you know, Prince drugs or Michael Jackson drugs to put yourself completely out, or drugs, right? But now here's the thing. When I had taken enough that I was falling asleep, I just took one gulp of this cup I had made, which is silly as hell. It's actually pretty much a comedy at that point. I decided when I took one drink, it was awful tasting. I threw it all down the drain. I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever thought of in my life. It just gave me sentient thought. And I don't recommend you go to the edge to figure this out. Listen to me and just learn. But I'm sitting on the side of my bed. There's carpet here and a sliding glass door here. And the floor just fell out. It went down to an infinite void. It was terrifying. I don't have any other experience like this in my life. But if any of you have seen the finale of Time Bandits, there's them running around on these plateaus, like made of steel or concrete or something. And then there's this infinite void down below. Sort of like that. But at that point, a message came to me that felt like a group of people. This is probably what I forgot to say. I forgot to really put it into words like this. But it was as if everyone who ever loved me, who was on the other side, and I think most of my family was alive at the time. Yeah, I think all my grandparents were still alive. I got this message that basically said, if you do this, there's a repercussion. And I think it was my message. It wasn't for other folks that are going through much different things. So if you have someone who has committed suicide, please do not apply this to your friend. But I didn't have anything to complain about. I didn't have anything but a broken heart, a childish perception of a broken heart. I hadn't lived my entire life and gotten into some really dark situation. I wasn't in any chronic pain. I hadn't lost anyone close to me. So there's a lot of reasons why I think this may not apply to a lot of folks, right? And maybe it was a complete delusion on my part. I don't know. But I'll tell you what, it was so vivid. I'm 47, right? So this happened when I was 23, 24 years ago. It was so profound to me that at 47, all I merely need to do is bring up the image in my brain, which is burned into my memory like I was really there. I can see it just like it happened a second ago. And I think to myself, well, I'm always saying it's a hell of a thing to be a man. It's probably a hell of a thing to be a woman. I'm just not one, so I don't try to say the other side. But you know, what is the mantra of a true man? You got to nut up and own life. There's plenty of women that do it too. But this was my responsibility to be alive. Like the fictional character Samson said in Carnival, dying is the easy part. It really is. It's living that's the hard part. I don't think anyone should fear death. I really don't. But I think that the way that you can ensure that death is a natural stage of transformation, of transcendence back into the universe, where your spirit, which is not the slightest bit affected by anything in this reality, right? This reality cannot affect your spirit other than to perhaps draw from it properly or ignore it through ignorance. Your spirit knows all things. It's connected to the entire universe. It's your mortal coil that if you abuse it, doesn't have great access to your spirit. So when a kid gets vaccinated and their brain gets fried and they seem a little bit handicapped mentally, it's just because their mortal coil was damaged to access their spirit. But I firmly believe your spirit is completely sovereign unto itself. It has its own identity. Perhaps it is like a cue. It knows everything. Who knows? But we aren't that in pure form. We have a mortal coil, which gives us a perception of mind, which is the thought we've managed to manifest between our spirit and our body. And the pressure of mortality is to get as much as you can get from this life. Wring that son of a bitch dry. Get as much as you can. And always realize no matter what day you wake up, you have complete control over what you have control over. You can do anything. You really can. You can do anything you can do physically. As far as mental capacity, well, have you ever learned anything in your life? There you go. You got your proof. You can add things to your mortal coil inside that brain of yours. You know, we always talk about how mathematics exists, and all we do is simply discover it. You know, 1 + 1 = 2. Well, before man realized that was the case, that still was true. Maybe the only thing that we're doing with our mortal coils is uncovering math about life. Again, if we live forever, if our spirits were to live forever, the last thing we want to be is some omnipotent being that's experienced everything from all perceptions, from all experiences. And so we would create this mortal coil experience such that we would limit our knowledge to rediscover it again, to believe in Santa Claus again, to believe in magic again, to fall in love again, to be hurt again, to recover, and to have a manifest destiny that you can build yourself. What if in a previous life you were a master architect or some incredible mother? This particular time, that thing is not happening, so there must be something else that you can do with what you have. Now, for those of you who can't have kids, I've dated at least one person that biologically could not have children. It was very devastating to her to find that out. She applied herself to her sister's kids, to other people's kids. She got the motherly thing that she couldn't personally have. Now, she could have adopted as well, but I guess for whatever reason, she chose not to do that. You know, some people feel like they're not fit to be full-time parents because perhaps they're dealing with some trouble within themselves. That's fine. Well, when you are good to be a parent throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the year, you can apply yourself to other kids. Volunteer. So as far as the family sector goes of life, if that's part of your destiny, believe me, you can get it. You know, it sounds a little odd, but you could strategically marry someone with children. How many times you go on a dating website and someone says, you know, there's a checkbox that says, please have kids. I don't think that checkbox exists in any of those sites, right? But maybe that's what you want to do. If you don't think about your mortality, there's probably two sides to that coin. You don't need to because you're content with life. And then it doesn't matter. It could be that you've simply forgotten to think about your mortality, but you do care about every second of your life. You could be either way. Of course, if you're the former, you're not listening to this episode an hour in for sure. I told you guys in a previous episode that a buddy of mine gave me a book about the fear of death. It was a bunch of psychiatrists who were Freudian disciples who did buy into the fact that everyone has a massive fear of death. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. And I do not believe that in our culture today, when we're surrounded by death of all kinds, that that's actually true anymore. I think back in the day when these folks were growing up and developing their philosophies, we didn't have mass media exposing us to the worst things that society can accomplish. And so when the subject of death came up, it was very taboo, I don't think it's that way anymore. How many shows do you watch on TV that don't have deaths right in the very beginning? Once you start becoming a little bit spiritual, you'll find it a little painful that we don't have a true knowledge of the universe and how it works. Well, imagine if we did have full knowledge of the spirit world. Full knowledge of the spirit world. We could see the ecosystem of the universe whereby which we do live forever, and this form of life has been designed by us to deal with the fact that if we don't do this, we're going to go crazy in the universe. It has been my suspicion for a very long time that one of the reasons why perhaps we're not allowed to know about the spiritual universe, besides our probably physical limitations to do so, I think we've been designed not to be able to prove it to ourselves, right? I think the reason why spirits that you can feel around you cannot prove themselves to you, besides intuition, I think the reason it's that way is so that we don't get folks that kill people willy-nilly because they believe that, well, what does it matter? You are my way, and so I resorted to killing you to get my way, and I know that you're just going to recycle, so whatever. Isn't it interesting that if that were true, that means that the sovereignty and common law to do no harm, that you're not allowed to interrupt my destiny by killing me? That's like one of the most fundamental laws of the universe. And again, that's derived from the fact that we don't want anyone to kill us, and so we apply that to don't kill me. It's the rule for you too. But isn't it interesting? It would seem that even on the spiritual realm of infinity, that we recognize the fact that to have this experience of life, to live in a mortal coil, one that ends, that we protect it, that it's supposed to be protected. And I think there's an interesting thing, and I'll close this thing off. It's getting really long. This is going to sound totally silly to some of you, and for some of you, you're going to go, yeah. When you're young, you kill insects. Just no problem. You're in my space, you're dead. Everyone develops rules. Some people have rules where it's like, if you're in my house, I get to kill you. If you're outside, I'll leave you alone. But the interesting thing that happens, at some point in your life, you start to see the little life of an insect. And you start to realize that they're in a little mortal coil. And even if you leave them alone, they only live a few days, a few weeks, maybe a month. And you start to think differently about them because you can see yourself inside them. You're living in a much, longer lifespan than they live. And you get people that rescue these insects and put them outside. I used to have I've never been ever afraid of insects, ever. I don't like things that can sting me, of course. I do have rules when they start to overpopulate on the outside of my house. I will definitely discourage them from doing so with a garden hose. But in that way, I'm not trying to really kill them, even though it probably does. But I'll move things outside if I can. Killing an insect for me at this point is something of last resort. And if I have to kill it, I feel a little shitty. I'm like, well, crap, I gotta end your life. But I value their life as much as I value mine on a certain level. And there's religions, of course, the true vegans of the world in India, they do the real extreme ones that I think hold the absolute tip of the spear on this movement. They have the little brooms that they carry around with them, and they sweep in front of their feet with the notion that they are sweeping out of the way of their footsteps any insect that's living, because all life is sacred. Isn't it interesting that a sector of the world gains such a perception of life that they built it into their religion? Unfortunately, they didn't figure out that plants are alive, but whatever. But a lot of them say, well, they only eat fruit buried from a tree. Because if an apple falls off a tree, well, it's just going to die on the ground, so you might as well consume it as a part of nutrition, and that you have a life cycle relationship with the tree that bears fruit. It's very interesting, right? So what's the summation of this episode? Because I've meandered all around the various aspects of mortality. It is my personal belief that people that feel like they are living for their destiny while they are alive are more happy people. They're more kind to other human beings. I think to the degree you love yourself, you can love other people. And to the degree you despise yourself, well, you're that person that everyone talks about. You're the Debbie Downer. You criticize other people incessantly. And we've all had moments where we do this. When I was really young, one of my relatives was very stoic and kind of strange. I think this person is very happy nowadays, but my mom told me once a line that blew my mind. I think I was about 14 years old, somewhere in that range. And she said, well, you know what his problem is? And I said, what? And she goes, well, he doesn't like himself. And so he can't like others. And my mind could not conceive of what she was saying, but now I get it. You can only exude what's inside you. And so I find it extremely important that individuals find their destinies within their mortal coils, within the mortality of the lifespan that they have. And that's all of us. We have to do it. But now the other thing about life that I will repeat that a car salesman told me, it's really funny. Before I started my video game company, I had taken a major financial hit on behalf of someone else. I lost a bunch of money for someone else. And my credit rating went from near 800 to like 580. It was depressing. And I went, because I needed a new car, I tried to buy a new car. And I absolutely, positively failed the loan process. It was like that Simpsons episode where the siren goes off on the computer and Homer Simpson goes, is that a good siren? It was that moment. And this car salesman leans back and gives me probably one of the greatest pieces of wisdom that I had never heard put into words, which is that life is made of peaks and valleys. And sometimes you're in the valley. But he also looked at me and said, he goes, don't worry. You can only go up from here. And little did he know, I was literally, I don't know when it happened, probably 8 months from starting my game company and ending up paying myself more money than I've ever been paid in my life, with benefits that were immeasurable. So if you're in a valley, or you think you're headed into a valley, I would say pull up this car salesman in your mind and realize that you will pop out of it. It just happens. Nothing you can do about it. It's almost awesome how it always seems to pull you out. So it's important that when you're either going down into a valley or you find yourself in one, that you don't need to do anything foolish to end this process of being alive prematurely if you can. And I know we've had listeners that have experienced suicides as of recently. It's one of the things I want to mention, which is something we don't usually mention, is that I would say in 2016 here, in the fall of 2016, it's about to show up here, the amount of suicides I've heard about recently have been very high. I have heard, one of my friends was at work, and she said the woman she talked to had to admit that her 15-year-old son had committed suicide recently. He wasn't in a bad home. He wasn't on any drugs. Something just broke the guy down to the point he took his own life. One of our other listeners has been gracious enough to share her own loss from a very good friend. He's probably in his mid-50s, early to mid-50s. If you're in a situation where your life is going well, you're on a peak. Maybe you haven't seen a valley in a really long time. Maybe you don't have any more valleys ahead of you. That's very, very possible. You're on a plateau of awesomeness. Even though it wiggles a little bit, you're happy and you're in control. Do me a favor. Reach out to other people incessantly. Reach out. Talk. Use the love that's in your own life, inside your body, inside yourself. And check people. Check if they're okay. Sometimes just asking another human being. I know this has happened with me when I've been down. Someone just goes, are you okay? Do you need anything? And at that moment, you either go one of two ways. You say, you know what? Yes. Yes. Please. I could really use some of this. Maybe it's a hug. Maybe it's a check. Maybe it's whatever. But a lot of times, the majority of times that I've ever been asked that question, I get the same exact euphoric feeling that somebody cares. And then I nut up and I own my life. I go to myself, just literally in that split second, I just say, you know, thanks for asking. I know what I need to do. I've just been lazy, or I've been complacent. And I'm going to do tonight, tomorrow, the next day after that. I'm going to do whatever I need to do, such that the next time you ask me that question, I don't feel like I do right now. Think about the deathbed analogy if you're having any questions about your life. Go out and get it. Go out and get the life you want. And just realize that the second you push stop on this video or the credits roll at the very end, you can just make the decision. I'm going to be the person I want to be. Even though I may not have the possessions that will be the result of being the person I want to be, I'm going to go get them. I'm going to go get a family. I'm going to go get a spouse. I'm going to go get a job. I'm going to get whatever the hell I want. I'm just going to be happier. Screw this. If it doesn't kill me, then I'm good. I think that's where we're on this one. If you made it this far, thanks for listening. My God, these episodes get pretty esoteric, but hopefully they're useful to you. If you haven't been to MK Ultra Radio, please do. It's where the audio and video exist. There's a Facebook page, too. It's a whole other show. We haven't recorded it in a long time. It'll probably be quite a while before we get a chance to record it again. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourself and somebody else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.